I'm Anita Johnson of Hard Knock, excited to be hosting this gathering. Get tickets at brownpapertickets.com, Marcus Books, or other indie bookshops. Get full information on the KPFA website. For Kenyaga Yamada Taylor, December 5th.
Fear, anxiety, and confusion grips a lot of folks in today's dark post-election world. There is a lot of fake news, propaganda, and misinformation emanating from phony media outlets. If you're searching for the truth, unfiltered news, in-depth public affairs programming, you can count on one independent radio station to do what it's been doing for 67 years, staying vigilant as always. 94.1 FM, KPFA.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is a minute past 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, whoa, as we often say, situation so dire we can't afford the luxury of realism. And so, briefly, we turn to the mythic news before I bring in our two splendid guests. Mercury, representing the intelligence of communication, and Hermes, a little bit of the trickster dynamic. It's as though the backstage gods are willing to jump into the secular calendar, because Mercury stations and retrogrades on December 19th, early that morning, which is very witty and full of possibilities. We'll work with everything. Magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. So that is, of course, the day when the Electoral College meets to vote on the president. And we go, oh. So, you know, I'm not prone to prediction because the future is not fixed, and otherwise we couldn't have a democracy. But in January of 2000, I was perusing that year and looking at the election night of 2000 and going, oh, look, Mercury stations and retrogrades that night at about 9:39 p.m. I wonder what that will mean, perhaps the election that is never over. So here we go, well, how, you know, believe nothing, entertain possibilities. How would we like to animate that? And that especially will be the sort of second portion of our show with wonderful Daniel Brezhnev, a political activist, writer, professor of human services, to discuss the upcoming Electoral College vote and his campaign of nationwide grassroots action, calling party officials, really expanding the conversation and, you know, welcoming uncertainty and mystery into the thing. And then as we dive for the winter solstice, not given to hyperbole, but perhaps the most important winter solstice so far in our lives, because it is the darkest night, the longest night, the wheel is turning. What will we get rid of? What will we give to the night, as Starhawk often chants? And it is the birth of the trickster redeemer, not a human, but the birth of hope in each heart. And at the end of the year, Jupiter, representing storytelling, is at 20 degrees of Libra. Uranus, trickster, ingenuity, keeper of democracy, is at 20 degrees of Aries, stationing to go forward, which is outward. And Saturn, you know, kind of authority and how we define leadership, is at 20 degrees of Sagittarius. So it's not enough to have 20/20 hindsight. We want 20/20/20 hindsight. And the theme there is it's grounded serendipitous synchronicity. We're heading into a wild, topsy-turvy, spinning story narrative. And I turn to a friend of mine's great dream, Virginia Daly, one of the great painters, a longtime student with the Lakota Sioux. But years ago, she had this dream, and it's so pertinent to us and the end of the year and this show and our guests. And in the dream, There's a dark, wraith-like, scary figure stirring a cauldron. And the voice in the dream tells our narrator, "You must move towards the cauldron and put your hand on the story-stirring stick, you know, and stir the cauldron in the other direction." So she slowly makes her way as though the air is molasses, you know, and the minute she touches the stirring stick, the wraith-like scary thing dissipates and vanishes into whatever. And she slowly begins to stir the cauldron in the other direction. So, yes, we have two guests today who are going to help guide us to grab, no, or touch the story stirring stick and stir it in the other direction. Our theme is inaugurating Standing Rock, really, and electing sane reverence, our story guides. We first welcome Bob Goff, longtime Lakota lawyer and Strawbale permanent Echo Village builder, and, you know, intertribalcoup.org, filing scouting reports from Standing Rock, and then we will, at perfect time, bring Daniel Brezhnev in to guide us about the Electoral College. So, welcome, Bob.
Hi, Carolyn. Great to be with you.
Yeah, and there you are, joining us from Mandan, where you are sheltering from the stormy weather to gather your wits before the veterans arrive, yeah?
Right. We're just about 40 miles away from Cannonball, maybe a little more, and been down at the camp, and working with the camp folks in terms of rumor control when you speak of stories. Huh. There are all sorts of stories to be hashed through and divined of what's going on here. But we are looking at building the winter camp, what they're calling the new winter camp, which is on the reservation side of the Cannonball River on tribal land, so it won't be subject to any of the threats that we're hearing being made with regard to the camp north of the Cannonball River. So, yeah, we're right here. The storytelling season, of course, most of Indian country, and certainly the Ojibwe and the Lakota in large part, start in the winter. Winter is that time, and winter has set in here with a vengeance, with ice and snowstorms this past week to beat the band. So winter is here. People are sheltering in place, if you will, and divining through the rumors and the stories and preparing for what's coming for the next couples of weeks.
And one of the crucial things, really, that comes out of so many allies, and, you know, Michael Goldstein, Doug, talked to him, ally, last night, just returned from Standing Rock, and going, it really is the wedding of activism and animism. I mean, it really is the wedding of prayerfulness and honoring of water and sane reverence, you know, kind of guiding the action, yeah?
Yes, it's been interesting to watch the dynamics of a lot of people who would like to take things a step further, but have been constrained by the requests of the elders, the tribal leadership here, that are saying, keep it prayerful. I mean, there's a sign coming into Cannonball, to the Cannonball River, says drive prayerfully, you know, not carefully, but prayerfully.
That's really great. Yes, it's also like sage against the machine, right?
Right, exactly. So it's, you know, the idea of following the lead, the indigenous lead, from those who want to keep it nonviolent and prayerful, and that this is really, these are the major weapons that will bring this whole situation, turn it around and protect the waters of the Missouri River.
Yes, and maybe we don't call it a weapon, possibly, although I know the language, you know, we might call it, you know, stepping back into the choreography of creation, or just, we're just priming the pump. We're just priming the pump for different models, many things, that we want to honor, and curious allies. I think that's part of the dynamic. And when we turn to Daniel about, you know, keeping things prayerful, you know, and the idea of the Electoral College possibly coming, you know, to be an agent of sane, reverent common sense going, oh, my God, we can't do that, you know, may so much be revealed in which everybody goes, whoa, you know, and people go, oh, but many people will be very angry and rise up and there'll be a civil war. And we go, well, we'll keep it civil. But I'll toss that to Daniel in some moments. But first, let's put also on the table. So the veterans are arriving, maybe 2,000 people. Is that right?
There was a call went out for 500 veterans, and they got over 2,100 is the number that is expected or to be arriving this weekend. And then there's a waiting list, and they're talking about a follow-up week for another group coming out this one coming out through the 3rd through the 8th, leaving on the 9th. So maybe a second group coming out after that. The whole idea is to really press the protection of the water through these next 31 days, through the month of December, because on January 1st, it's a new year. On January 1st, the contractual obligations of the oil producers who have signed with the Dakota Access Pipeline for that pipeline to carry their oil out of North Dakota. By that date, the pipeline has to be operational. If it's not, those contracts can be broken. Those contracts can be void.
Whoa.
And you got to remember the financial piece on this. We've seen the Bank of Norway and engaged by the Sami and other indigenous folks to really look at their investments in these kinds of pipelines where they're threatening indigenous peoples. That focus on the story of this particular pipeline. And it's been recognized as being racist in terms of the move. Even the white ranchers in North Dakota recognize that the pipeline was supposed to go north of the city of Bismarck. And the city of Bismarck, I believe in there, is justified saying, we're concerned this pipeline could break, could leak, could spill, and threaten our water supply. We don't want it here. So then it was moved south about 30 miles right above the Standing Rock Sioux Indian Reservation. And the Standing Rock people, the people of Cannonball District, have said the same thing the people of Bismarck said. We don't want this thing because it can spill, it can leak. We don't want it spoiling and polluting our waters. Same argument, but somehow the political machinery behind the profits of the pipeline have seen that Indian country, indigenous peoples, lands and resources are deemed to be expendable. And that's a message that has clearly gone out from Standing Rock, that is not the case. Indigenous peoples are standing up to protect those resources for all of us, because for everybody else who lives downriver of the Missouri, do not want these pipelines breaking and polluting our waters.
And there is a little bit of trickster synchronicity, wonderful, beautiful magic that we want to bring into all the stories. You know, the Norwegian bank, the Sami who were supplicating, or some better word, them, and the Norwegian bank said, oh, but if only you could give us a credible report, a really grown-up report on, you know, offenses against, you know, human life, you know, and then you can help fill in the details here, but somebody at Standing Rock had been working very hard to compile this and was like, here, right? I mean, so...
Exactly. So people have been very careful in documenting this entire process, and the 15, I think it's $17 million spent on the Sheriff's Department of Morton County and law enforcement to crack down, if you will, on the protesters. Basically, it's been bringing human rights violations to the protectors of this of these waters.
Right.
And we documented very carefully, and one of the first suits that has been filed now by the National Lawyers Guild against the human rights violation of the county and the sheriff's departments.
Yes, and then the National Lawyers Guild is filing a suit against the sheriff and the governor, right?
Yes.
Right. Well, and again, part of where we'll expand, and I think bring Daniel in a moment here. You know, the stories, the all inclusive stories. I loved some of what's been going out with the veterans saying, you know, everybody. This includes everybody. If you're a Republican, it's about small government, not interfering, and eminent domain. Blah blah. If you're a libertarian, it's everybody. And I think that's part of also the electoral college dynamic. So I can't resist any further. But to bring in our second guest, Daniel Brezhnev, political activist, writer, professor of human services, discussing the upcoming Electoral College. Okay, we're going to weave Standing Rock in the Electoral College. I know we can do it, team. And his campaign of nationwide grassroots action, calling party officials, writing letters to editors. This is good for everybody. Raising funds and getting ready for actions at the state capitals on December 19th. You can learn more and join the petition, encouraging the 538 electors who picked the president on December 19th, Mercury stationing retrograde, to vote with their conscience and cast ballots for sanity. Hillary will do. So welcome, Daniel.
Hi, Carolyn. Thanks for having me on.
That's great. And I think we can weave to and fro, because these are two really important stories, and they are, you know, related. You know, I've been looking over, you know, much of your great work, and in one of the TV clips that you were on, you said, you know, it's larger even than the electors. It's expanding the conversation, right?
Absolutely. I don't think most Americans realize just how unequal the Electoral College system is, that when you vote in a small state, you basically get 2.5 extra votes tacked on to yours. And this is an antiquated system that was explicitly designed to protect the institution of slavery. That wasn't a good goal at the time. It certainly doesn't make any sense now. And, you know, I think if most Americans understood how unequal it was, they'd probably want to support a national popular vote. But while we're stuck with the Electoral College, one of its features is that the electors can vote however they want. And the founders did that because they didn't trust democracy. Well, this year, the electors can vote for a safer candidate, a candidate who respects the Constitution, who's not sowing hatred and division and tweeting impulsively about his geopolitical strategies, you know, at 3 a.m. They can do that, and they can support the will of the people, which by many millions is in favor of Mrs. Clinton being president. So we think it's a good cause this year, and very important to continue the discussion no matter who's inaugurated.
Right. And as you ably animate, I think what connects, you know, both stories really of sane reverence is, you know, colonialism. You know, right, it's the last vestiges of colonialism raising its ugliness at Standing Rock, going, everything is so animated as a vulgar cartoon. And you just said also that the Electoral College, you know, goes back really to slavery and colonialism and all of those things. And it's what we always wanted the election to be, in a way, which would be educational public discourse. You know, did you know? You know, Bob's so good at that, and so many of the Standing Rock, you know, contributors, and you're out there, you know, engaging people. And did you know things that we should know about in order to have a democracy and in order to be citizens, right?
Yeah, really hoping that we can elevate the debate from, you know, trolls and tweets and sound bites to, you know, a really informed discussion of our Constitution and the checks and balances, the pros and cons, you know, what's right for our nation now, how we've changed over these last 240 years. It's really important. And I'm glad you pointed out the connection with colonialism. I think there are a lot of connections between, what we're doing and what the folks at Standing Rock are doing. And I just want to take a moment and just say to Bob directly, thank you so much for being out there. And I definitely am standing in solidarity with everything you're doing. We've tried to promote it a little bit with our, you know, network, our digital network, and you know, been watching the events there for really since they started. Before, you know, they've come into more of the public's attention since the election, which I think is great. been watching for a while. I've had some friends head that way and sending supplies and all that. So just really appreciate that you're out there on the front line and braving the cold and the, you know, the militarized police forces and standing up for you know, First Nations rights and for the environment and for you know, the people against these moneyed interests that don't really care
exactly
about the impact they have. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you, Daniel. Appreciate that. We realize that the when they call these interactions riots, the only people who are paid rioters who come dressed for it is law enforcement. It's no one on the side of the protectors. And people are taking to heart and just standing there, I mean, weaponless, naked, unarmed, and just pleading with the humanity of the security forces to appreciate what's going on. And so, you know, we're a lot of people doing that, making those sacrifices. But I think the looking at the big college debate coming up, Trump University versus the Electoral College,
right.
we're all interested in these indoor sports, too.
Right.
Ironically, I think there's more learning going on in the Electoral College than there ever was in Trump University. It's probably closer to an actual college than Trump University is.
Well, yes, and we've all, as American people, been inadvertently enrolled in Trump University. Let us speak in both realms and interweave the connectedness between these stories. Again, no isolated crisis of isolation. It is all one thing, and you know, and I think we see unfurling horror is I think a theme. You know, certainly with Trump, I mean, every day is like, oh my god, you know, and his meeting with the Prime Minister of Pakistan today, going, a fantastic country, fantastic man, just one of the best ever, what a fantastic people, but and anything you need, Pakistan, you know, causing India to go, it is a satirical unfurling, like, oh my god, and more grown-ups are getting appalled, and I think for both of these stories, I like the metaphor of, you know, water in saturation, meaning you add, say, salt or sugar to water and it dissolves, and then you add one more grain and it all falls out. And I think that both of you endeavored in your storytelling is, you know, it comes to a certain point in which people just I can't vote for this man. I can't support this militarization. I can't do it, right? I mean, does that, let me turn to Bob first with the veterans coming in. Do you think there's also moments where can we envision, what would you like us to envision, you know, some of the hard-hearted mercenaries going, I can't do this anymore?
Well, we've seen that some of the sheriffs have turned in their badges saying they never signed up for this. And we had visions of, you know, veterans showing up in winter gear, 10 across, 50 deep. That'd be pretty impressive. And that's with only 500. Now we're talking maybe 25 across and going back to the horizon. I know that the veterans are showing up, and they're going to basically submit to the command of the protectors, of the indigenous peoples. They're the ones leading. The veterans have said, if you want us to give you guys a break, we'll stand on the front line and make sure nothing happens. If you want us to stand behind you as a readied force, we are there, just to show that we are standing in solidarity. And they've been hearing from veterans all over the country, those who can make it, those who may come later, and those who are standing in place. So we're very grateful to this outpouring, because it brings us cognitive dissonance to a whole lot of red America that says, they look at this and they say, well, we're for veterans.
Right.
And the veterans are for Indians. We might have to be for the Indians on this one.
Exactly.
You know, it's a hard thing to swallow.
Right. And then cognitive dissonance, I think, is a good tossing the baton, the story stick back to you, Daniel, going cognitive dissonance, you know, and did you know, and the unfurling horror. Well, we can do a lot of unfurling horror back and forth, but yeah, cognitive dissonance. You have your electoral college petition.com/take-action. You have 4 million people who've signed that, right?
4.6 something, and we're being told that it's now officially the largest petition that's ever been on change.org. It was the largest in the United States for many days, but we surpassed one in China that had been larger. And, you know, so we think it's probably the largest petition ever in the United States, or maybe anywhere else, because, you know, internet petitions have to be bigger than paper ones ever could. And so it's been an amazing response. You know, cognitive dissonance, I mean, could be the motto of a Trump administration if they knew what it meant. You know, I mean, the truth and fact is out the window. We literally are having government by internet troll now. And, you know, it's been fascinating to hear people express their views on the Electoral College with such certainty. You know, many people sending us messages or, you know, commenting on social media. And, you know, they all kind of have the same talking points because it's what you get when you go to Wikipedia. And they just, you know, they're just so certain and passionate about it all of a sudden. And it's been very interesting to dig deeper into the histories. I've been talking to a lot of scholars on the phone and making sure where, you know, we have our facts right and that our arguments are cogent. And, you know, of course, you're talking about cognitive dissonance. It's been a long time since you could say, well, I have an education or I'm an expert. And everyone would say, oh, okay, well, tell us, you know, because you're the expert. It hasn't been that way for a long time, but now we're so far down the rabbit hole that if you make any claims to expertise or education or, well, I read a whole bunch of books on the subject or I took a class, you know, you're suspect. You're obviously less credible than someone who just kind of tweets whatever they think. And that's one reason, I think, is because people can't handle the cognitive dissonance. They just want their prejudices affirmed, and this is what Mr. Trump and, you know, Bannon and his team are so good at, just reaffirming our prejudices and playing to them, getting us all worked up.
And so just in calling in backstage help, who knows, you know, that you know, I go, you know, I'm not expectation partner of disappointment. Okay, I'm not expecting. We're not expecting. You know, but we are willing. You know, and I think part of what Bob Standing Rock and you are doing is like, we got to do everything, or we'll always wonder. And you know, and I'm not seeing Trump inaugurated. Remember, the word inaugurate comes from the augur, the diviner, who would walk out into nature, probably around Standing Rock, and nature would reveal the responsible human, and then they would be inaugurated. That's where the word comes from, right? Yeah. And so, if we track everything back, you know, including language to its liberating impulse, it just is like, oh okay. You know, and so we, you know, it's available, you know. Mercury retrogrades back to Pluto. Things that are hidden are revealed, you know, right around December 19th. I think part of your organizing and encouraging people to you know, be out there, actions at state capitals. I mean, everything is really important. Again, it's all part of some rising sane reverence. But, you know, we might hold forth the prospect that so much damning evidence rises to the surface in the next few weeks. That, you know, people go, oh, Trump, no, because there is the dissonance of the betrayed as they go, oh, my coal job isn't coming back, but that might take a little long, right? So, but I mean, would you like to invoke so much? Well, there's so much on the table already, but more coming forth in which even people go, oh, or the Electoral College people go, oh, the you know, I've been entrusted with democracy.
Yeah, that would certainly help. I mean, if there was some revelation, you know, of course, it gets harder and harder to imagine what would be damning enough.
Right.
Because if all the things that have come out about him over the course of the election and now these picks for these important posts aren't damning enough, it's just really hard to imagine. You'd have to, you know, have him on videotape, you know, exchanging cash with Vladimir Putin or something. I mean, I don't know. Even then, you'd think.
Even then, it's Vlad the Impaler. That's right.
It's very hard to imagine, but we're certainly hopeful that something like that will help, give some courage and some inspiration to some of these Republican electors who I have to think there's at least 38, probably more. There's probably 100 who really don't like Trump and are very uncomfortable with him. And some of them, I would guess that many of them don't think that they have the right.
Yes.
They don't think they have any ability to vote their conscience. And some might think they have the right, but that it's just too crazy. Their party will hate them, and it'll, you know, it's just too out there, too much of a radical step. So I think something really outrageous from Trump may help move some of them.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to take we're going to take a very short break. Our splendid guest today, we are inaugurating Standing Rock, electing sane reverence, no time to be passive. Rouse, pick self up off floor. Uncertainty is our ally. And we will be right back after a very short break.
She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled him crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Ooh, shiny, 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 come blow my shiny home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Ah, get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, here on KPFA 94.1 and KFCF in Fresno. Hello, teammates, and also coming up in Los Angeles, KPFK. So, yes, here we are, inaugurating Standing Rock, electing sane reverence with our story guides, our wonderful ally, Bob Goff, reporting in from Mandan, where he's taking a break from the harsh weather inside the hotel rooms filled with tobacco smokes from the casino, and we wish him well, and reporting in, and our equally splendid guest, Daniel Brezhnev, a political activist, writer, professor of human services, who actually will come right back to you, quit your job to do this thing, who is, again, discussing the upcoming Electoral College vote and what it means and how everything could change. Again, we're not expecting, but we are willing, and his campaign of nationwide grassroots action, calling party officials, yes, writing letters to editors, yes, like Lawrence Lessig, raising funds, getting ready for actions at state capitals on December 19th. Mercury's backing you up. Learn more, join the petition. So you were right in the middle of a thought. Oh, that's right, Daniel, the revelation of greater horror, and then we'll turn to Bob for the unfurling horror and how it's waking people up.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, where even though we'd love to see something come out about Trump that was outrageous enough to inspire more Republican electors to vote their conscience and vote against them, we're not counting on that, and we are instead working with a coalition of people, including some electors on the Democratic side, some scholars, some elected officials, and to reach out directly to electors, not asking the public to do that, but we're doing that directly and targeting the electors that we think are most likely to be sympathetic and may give us a listening. So we're working on that and hoping that we can compel them, convince them with our argument.
Right. The unfurling horror is pretty strong, and it's like when, you know, and even the backstage gods are like, what will it take? We revealed this and the insane thing, and then he can't stand losing, and he made up about 2 million votes and the thing and the hush. So yes, what would it take? We wonder, but it's like whatever it takes, come on in. And Bob, you know, back to Standing Rock and the veterans arriving, and then so much tragic harm has happened. happen, the young woman Sophia, who may lose her arm, we don't know. What is the story on that? The young woman delivering water at 3 a.m. who was hit with a flash grenade that took off the flesh and much of the bone of her lower arm, right?
We're still waiting to hear on the outcomes from that, because she was removed to Minneapolis, so she's not here any longer. We're waiting for word from her folks. But I just wanted to ask Daniel a question. The Electoral College has more freedom than a jury does for nullification, if you will, in terms of representing democracy and being able to assert their democratic right to vote their conscience. I've not heard much discussion about that, and I'm really delighted to see you've been reviewing your petition and the like. And I just wanted to know if, as I understand it, there's a 13-year-old rape trial, federal trial, that is scheduled for the 16th of December.
That'll
be I believe that woman dropped those charges.
Okay, that was
dropped. Not pursuing that. Yeah, yeah.
I see.
But you're right about the Electoral College. Actually, I love what you just said, and I hadn't thought of it that way. But that's a great little talking point that, you know, by law they do have more power to decide than a jury does. A jury is bound very much by law in many cases to either acquit or convict based on the facts and the law. And really, there's nothing in the Constitution like that for an elector. There are state laws that attempt to bind them. We think those laws would probably fail judicial scrutiny, but they haven't really been tested. But the Constitution certainly doesn't put any constraints on them. And in 21 states, there are no laws binding them either. So they're certainly free to do as they wish in those states. And that includes Texas, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, Louisiana, Indiana, a bunch more.
And that freedom goes to pick whomever they want,
right.
Not necessarily between the two leading candidates.
Correct. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Any qualified person, you know, 35 years old, natural born citizen, etc.
Wow. Many people are like, oh, Pence, you know, is Trump a Trojan horse for Pence all the time, going, we don't, so they could do that, or they could pick anybody, or they could pick Hillary, who won, you know, 2.1 million more popular vote. Right. So well, it is in keeping with the kind of guiding myth story of a wild story storm maelstrom, you know, that we're heading into, doors opening and closing and unprecedented, and we like that. I don't know if it's waning. I mean, there are some people certainly in the course of this electoral journey, you know, who were defined primarily by their hatred of Hillary, going but I go, even the most, you know, whatever, you know, surely it looks like a better story. Surely with the unfurling horror. Come on, team. We all, you know, we love Bernie, but, you know, and, you know, surely it's a better story. Just melt your heart a little bit. But as is your petition, I've forgotten, I thought your petition was calling for them to vote for Hillary or not.
It is. And, you know, I understand that this is a long shot. I know there are efforts to get a moderate Republican in there. You know, I certainly support any efforts that are letting the electors know, hey, you know, you can vote your conscience, letting the American people know that reality, and trying to stop Donald Trump. I mean, I think anybody who's doing that, I congratulate them.
And what's the actual process? I mean, they meet on the morning of December 19th, and then they kind of hang out and have sandwiches and talk about it all? Or, I mean, how does it work?
Well, you know, we're still drilling down on all those details, and it's different in the different states. We really want to know all the details, like, what room are they going to be in, and who do they hand these results to, and what is that person's name, because we want to get the petition to them.
But they are...
Want to be...
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah. You know what?
We want to have a presence in the appropriate place and time. But yeah, it happens that morning. It happens in the state capitals, and I've got a crack research team working on getting us every minute detail of that.
Wow. So they're not all in one place.
The state legislature. They are in the state capitol. Yes.
Wait, all of their respective state capitals.
Correct. So not all in one place. Only in the state. Correct.
So,
the electors in the state go to the capitol.
So they're all in different state capitals, talking to each other on Zoom or something.
They don't talk to each other. They make their votes in their state capitals. Those votes are certified by state officials, and then they are delivered to the United States Congress, which a few weeks later then certifies all the results, and then we actually have a president-elect.
Ah, so when is that approximately?
I want to say January 6th.
Oh, my God, epiphany. Okay, 12th night. it's when January 6th is when the astrologers, the Magi, finally arrived, so that would be witty, 12 days of Christmas. But
I'm over here on my landline, and so I'm not near my computer. My phone died, too, so I can't double-check that. So hopefully somebody's Googling it right now, but I think it's January 6th.
Well, just for the fun of it, you know, and this applies over to Bob's realm, reporting in from North Dakota. Traditionally, Mercury retrograde, just as it does on December 19th, is also known for confusion and communication, and sometimes, well, your phone died, it's ahead of schedule, and things breaking down. You know, is there room for creative mayhem in which there's no accord, or the messages get lost, or what would happen if the actual kind of means of voting and communicating, you know, got kerfuffled?
I don't know if I quite follow that. Would you?
So all the different the electors, you know, the electors, oh please protect us from the Dementors, we say, but they're meeting in their respective state capitals, and you know, again, unprecedented stories just for the fun of it. What if actual, you know, electronics and computers broke down?
You know, there's not a whole lot of detail in the Constitution about that.
Right, exactly.
But there really are two possibilities. In 1876, there was a dispute about who the electors were, who they had voted for, and it was resolved by Congress. And it was a pretty shady business, actually. Rutherford Hayes was able to get the election away from Sam Tilden. Tilden was a Democrat. The way Hayes got it was his people basically promised the South they would pull their troops out and Reconstruction, the Union would pull the Union troops out of the South and end Reconstruction. So that's how he's got to be president. And it all happened because there was this dispute over the validity of some of the electoral votes, and Congress had to decide. And they kind of did it ad hoc. They created a committee. I mean, they just kind of made it up. And that's a lot of how the Constitution, that's what the Constitution gives us. It sort of says Congress will do it by whatever means they decide, basically. So that would be one thing. Congress would take control of that process and have to sort it out. And, you know, it's a Republican Congress, and
right,
the process would be politicized. The other possibility is litigation. And, any party to those proceedings might have standing and take that into a federal court. They'd probably at least get a hearing. But, you know, you could imagine federal court saying, well, this is Congress's job and we don't have any jurisdiction. I think it would depend on what the issues were that were being raised. And
right.
What part of the process they were in, and is there a civil rights claim, 14th Amendment claim, something like that. It would all be unprecedented. I mean, even if you could look at 1876 or some other years for some similarities, there wouldn't be really a playbook. It's going to be very different from anything that's happened before.
Yeah.
Well, and if you recall, in 2000, it was
right.
The then vice president, who was the president of the Senate, sitting, Al Gore, who had to read the results of the Electoral College once they made it in paper to Washington, D.C. And he had to confirm, because the Electoral College had in fact voted for George W. Bush. It didn't go to the House, which is where any contested case would go.
Right.
It went to the Senate, and the then president of the Senate, the vice president sitting of the U.S., because January 6th, the next administration hasn't been installed yet. Gore had to read the results, giving his election, where he won the popular vote, to Bush.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting process, full of ironic twists and turns. And this is the year.
This is
the year if we're going to see anything crazy happen.
Definitely.
We've got several fat ladies waiting to sing.
Right.
We're not done yet.
Right.
Carolyn, unfortunately,
I know you have to go.
I've got a client to go see and a class to go teach, but I really appreciate the time. It's been a great conversation.
That's great. And may craziness be your and all of our allies.
Thank you. Thanks for all you do, and thank you, Bob.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, so there goes our great ally. Again, you can sign the petition that he started with 4.6 million people there, electoralcollegepetition.com/take-action. That is our ally, Daniel Brezhnev. And he's, you know, put forward many things. You know, a former Bush counsel, Electoral College can't vote for Trump if he's in violation of the Constitution article. Trump to scrap NASA climate research and crack down on politicized science. I want to throw this back to you, Bob. Make Electoral College great again. Conscientious electors doing their job is another article. Bill McKibben, you know, this is also back to you, Bob. How the active many can overcome the ruthless few. So it's lively, team. It's lively. No time to just be on the floor going whaley whaley. It's like, no, there's things to move and, you know, paddles to put in the water to steer the thing, and, you know, experimental hoo-ha, and so off goes Daniel. That's good. I think it works really well. And back to you, Bob, on Standing Rock. You said there were 6,000 people there over Thanksgiving.
There was. It was quite an influx. And then, of course, that weekend finished with a lot of us, both in camp and down at Fort Yates. There was a large dinner planned for all to join in, and I think there was about not quite 2,000 people down there for that. But it was a way for us to symbolically enjoy giving the bird up to the DAPL pipeline en masse. And then we closed out that weekend with a wonderful, wonderful concert, Jackson Browne and Bonnie Raitt.
Oh.
And the Graffiti Band, John Trudell's old Graffiti Band. Some of those folks were present as well. And it was a great time, and that was the night the storm came in. And but most of this last week, people have been, like I said, hunkered down, frozen in place. Today was a little bit of a break in the weather, a little more traffic going on. But, folks are optimistic. I think that we will get through this December and see where January brings us. But we're looking at some real milestones in the next couple of weeks. So support to keep people here is critical, to support those who are able to stay through the end of this year, through the holidays, stay on the line. We are preparing an eco village, just south, as I said, south of the Cannonball River, and just on the south side of the road going to the Cannonball District. For anyone who's been here, you know where the red pit stop is, a little red building. Well, just about an eighth of a mile down the road, we've got a large chunk of land that the tribe has set aside, and this will be a permanent eco village with structures of Mandan earth lodges, the style from the tribes that lived along the river here. We're going to be having straw bale buildings, but we're also looking to bring in storage containers, lining them up in such a way that we will put trusses across spans between two storage, 20-foot storage containers, and isolate that space underneath by wrapping the entire structure in straw bales and having large areas for permanent kitchen spaces, showers, toilets, and the like up here on one site, so that if people are going to have to stay through the winter, and here it can get easily below 20 degrees below zero and stay there for a few days, we want to make sure that people have a safe place to be able to stay and weather that kind of winter temperatures and conditions.
And what is one of your favorite ways for people to contribute? People who want to send money or whatever, but for the moment, people who I have a personal ally who wants to send money. Do you have a favorite, or are there many, or what? Where would you?
Sure, there's a number out there. One of the earliest was the Sacred Stone GoFundMe site, the Sacred Stone Camp. That was the original camp. And then what we had was about a half dozen other camps grow up independently, organically, not necessarily led by other groups, but being able to show up and organize themselves. So there's no single leadership in any of these places. So we've now got to deal with people coming and trying to organize how do they move some of those camps out of the floodplain of the Tenenbaum River to safer, higher ground. How do we get them off of some of the sites that the Corps of Engineers has asked them to move off of, so that we can so that the Corps of Engineers wants to see people out of there for safety reasons and others. But the local campers, the local protectors, are quite agile at taking care of themselves in this winter weather so far, and have been sheltering and hunkering down in place, digging in. But we're providing another place for folks to be able to go when the weather gets can get terribly serious, terribly cold for terribly long periods of time.
Yeah, because you know you'd mentioned that back several whatever backstage about people showing up and pitching their tents and whatever in the floodplain, and you had to go no, but they go, the lake's over there, the lake will be soon at your campsite.
Right.
Here you go. So guiding the well-intentioned but not indigenously informed people showing up. Yeah, because it's an amazing, you know, I mean, everywhere I went, you know, in my little food co-op in Cabbage on Maryland, ran into two people who were like, I'm off to Standing Rock. In California, almost every other person I was talking to is like, I'm leaving for Standing Rock tomorrow. You know, how does it actually work? I mean, people, you know, and then wealthy environmentalists, you know, staying in hotels, I suppose, you know, but people just show up and they blend in, how is that working?
Most of them have friends of friends, and maybe you're going to one particular camp or another. I've had a number of calls, both from friends of friends looking for contacts here, as well as film documentarists and producers and the like, looking to come to be able to capture some of the story, to be able to get that message out again, because this again has taken on worldwide implications, and we've been you know, some of the tribal leadership has been all but overwhelmed with the kind of attention and the kind of support, really, that they're getting now. And the rumors, both from the overplaying of the hand of the state government officials. I mean, the governor has absolutely no jurisdiction to tell people who are camped on lands under the jurisdiction of the Corps of Engineers that they have to move. I mean, he may want that. That may be on his wish list for Christmas. I've got a wish list, too.
Excellent.
You know, orders like that just do not need to be obeyed and are not being obeyed because they're lawless, they're groundless, they're without the force of law. And we are telling people and asking people to call their congressional folks, to have them call the White House as well. I know there have been days where the White House lines have just been busy from morning till night. But let's keep that pressure up on the White House to do the right thing with its agencies and get a good consultation process going, get a good environmental impact statement process analysis underway, and let's look at this infrastructure build-out. If the new administration wants to do more infrastructure, that's fine. We can do it with renewables. We don't have to solidify and mortgage our future for the next 50, 60, 100 years to infrastructure that can only deliver fossil fuel to the market. Let's find sharper, cleaner, smarter ways to produce energy, get it to market, and build jobs and economies around that.
So we would want a person in the presidential spot who would listen to sane, reverent common sense. That would be our invocation, right?
That would be our invocation. We are putting together with groups from Washington, D.C. and the West Coast looking at electrified rail across east-west on the northern tier and in the southwest, and to see if we cannot have that powered by tribal renewable energy as a way of not just using and to market that power, but moving that power out across those rail corridors. And that's the perfect transmission corridor for DC high tension transmission lines. Bring it out along the rail lines and power the rails while you're at it along the way. And it could be done with renewable energy from reservations all throughout the West.
Oh, a good vision. That's a great vision to animate. And we're on our way out, but I want to underline two things too, which is make bad projects too expensive. That's what pulled the Norwegian bank out. And slow it down. Slow it down again by, if December 31st the pipeline can't be built, which you said is not even needed now, you know, they will pack up and go, oh, well, okay. So slowing things down and making expensive is part of our skill set, our strategy, yes?
Yes. And, you know, we may be able to use those pipelines at some point for moving water for this nation.
No.
So, you know, it's infrastructure that won't necessarily go away, and we may be able to find ways of repurposing it, if you will. Water under the Missouri River, not much of a threat compared to the bomb train oil that's coming out of the Balkans.
Oh, that's great. That's great. All right, so any last words of wishing or well-wishing you want to spiral out or, again, encouraging people to contribute?
Sure. I would ask people to go on the websites for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, for the website for the Indigenous Environmental Network. Go on the website for Honor the Earth and look for the Makaiki Ote, the Brown Earth Lodge House. That's the large straw bale building that we're putting up. A big round building we'll be constructing this spring here and using that as a model for community centers, community buildings throughout Indian country.
We will do that.
Great.
We will do that. Thank you. Thank you so much. And may you be strong and recovered and go back out there to greet the veterans. And they are doing something special that's wonderfully positive. We will see in a couple of days. Yay. Thank you for all your work. And keep filing scouting reports, Bob Goff.
We'll throw a salute your way, Caroline.
All right. That's great. Thanks always to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley and Timmy Olmsted in Washington, D.C. I'm Caroline Casey. Follow me on Twitter at Stand Up Coyote. And we will be right back. Oh, no, we won't be right back. We will be right back next week. Woof.
Hello, I'm Veronica Faison.
I got my mojo working, baby, and I'm gonna try it on you. Yeah, I'm gonna try it on.
I'm inviting you to join me on my new talk show, The Week Starts Here, Sunday night, 7:30 to 9 p.m. on KPFA. Together, you and I will tear down barriers, make new friends, and build bridges into the future one week at a time. Sunday nights will never be the same. The week starts here, 7:30 to 9 p.m., right here on 94.1 KPFA.
Attention KPFA listeners. KPFA's next fund drive starts on Tuesday, December 6th, and goes until Friday, December 16th. During this time, we invite anyone to come down to our phone rooms and volunteer their time answering calls and taking pledges. No experience is necessary. During this time, our phone room is open from 6:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. on weekdays and 7 a.m. on the weekends, Saturday closing at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Snacks, coffee, and tea will be provided. Please visit kpfa.org for more information about volunteering at KPFA. See you there.